Welcome to the EQ Fit Podcast. Our mission is to equip people to prosper in every aspect of their life. Whether you're at home or in the workplace, we explore practical ways of improving success, satisfaction, finding balance, and building enjoyable and beneficial relationships. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're getting into something pretty universally frustrating: the hidden and often really destructive mechanics of the hiring process.
Yeah, it's a huge topic.
It is. And we are pulling our insights today from a really brilliant piece of source material. It's an article by author Steve Goodner, and it was published on the EQ Fat blog. And that's pronounced EQ Fit, by the way.
Right.
The article is called Hiring Right: Finding People Who Grow Your Ecosystem, Not Drain It. And so our mission for this deep dive is to really unpack why hiring for, you know, perfect credentials so often backfires completely, and to figure out how you can actually identify the people who will grow your business rather than quietly bleeding it dry.
Exactly.
With that said, let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen a resume that looked like just an absolute slam dunk? I mean, the kind of credentialist that practically glows in the dark.
Oh, absolutely. The unicorn candidate.
Right. They have the exact degree, the perfect string of previous job titles, like the exact regional experience you need. And so you hire them thinking you just won the lottery, only to watch that quote unquote perfect candidate completely derail your team within a matter of weeks.
Yeah. And it is a phenomenon that plays out in boardrooms and, well, small businesses every single day. You bring in what looks like a superstar on paper, and within a month, the entire psychological dynamic of the office it fractures.
Yeah, it totally shatters.
Yeah. People who used to love their jobs are suddenly quiet in meetings, collaboration dries up, and the daily friction of just, you know, getting work done skyrockets.
Or they're secretly updating their own resumes on their lunch break.
Exactly.
And that is where Steve Goodner introduces a really compelling paradigm shift right out of the gate in his article. He argues that hiring for skills is merely a transaction. You know, you are simply paying for a past capability. But hiring for fit, for growth potential, for emotional intelligence, that is an act of stewardship. You aren't just acquiring a skill set. You are introducing a new resident into a delicate ecosystem, because every business, no matter how small, has a climate.
It really does. And Goodner anchors this entire ecosystem concept with a real-world case study that just beautifully illustrates the stakes here. He outlines the story of Tom, who owns a commercial flooring company just outside of Atlanta.
Okay.
And Tom is, well, he's the classic American small business success story. He built this operation from the ground up over 19 years. Started with literally a single pickup truck and a shared cell phone.
Yeah.
And eventually grew it into a thriving 32-person operation.
Wow, 32 people from one truck.
Yeah.
And Tom had built something incredibly rare in that time, which was genuine, deep-rooted loyalty. I mean, he had a foreman who had been with him for 14 years. He had an office manager who had been there for 11 years.
That's practically unheard of now.
Right. And Goodner notes that Tom paid above market for his region, and his people routinely stayed past retirement age simply because they felt safe and valued in the environment he had cultivated. So he had incredibly healthy soil.
He did. But, you know, healthy soil doesn't mean a perfect business. Sure. Tom had a massive operational blind spot. He was doing everything manually.
Oh, man.
Yeah. He desperately needed a sales operations leader because his entire pipeline was essentially held together by his own personal Rolodex, a whiteboard, and his estimator's good memory.
That is stressful.
Very. The company was outgrowing its founder.
Yeah.
So he finally decides to hire for the role, and the resume that lands in his inbox is just flawless. Mm-hmm. 12 years of regional flooring sales experience. An MBA, a massive portfolio of named accounts. She was even willing to relocate from Charlotte.
Wow.
Yeah, Tom is absolutely thrilled. He interviews her on a Thursday, makes the offer on a Monday, and she starts on the first of the month.
And then the collapse happens. It is actually staggering to look at the timeline Goodner outlines here, because it shows how rapidly an ecosystem can reject a new resident. So by day 60, Tom's deeply loyal 14-year foreman quietly pulls him aside and asks if this is still the company he signed up for.
Ouch.
Yeah. By day 90, his estimator, who usually has a great collaborative relationship with Tom, is sending updates with a cold, distant, highly defensive tone that Tom had never heard in a decade.
And the breaking point hits at day 110. That incredibly loyal office manager, the one who had been there for 11 years, she leaves a sticky note on Tom's computer monitor.
Oh, no.
Yeah. just says, we need to talk tomorrow, just the two of us. And 3 weeks later, Tom is sitting across from Steve Goodner asking how he could hire the best resume he had ever seen, only to watch his entire life's work just start to unravel.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this is like taking a prized, incredibly expensive saltwater fish and dropping it into a thriving freshwater tank.
It's a great way to put it.
Right. The fish isn't inherently bad or defective, but the ecosystem violently rejects it. So how does a well-meaning leader like Tom end up making this kind of fundamental environmental mismatch?
Well, notice what happens in that tank. The freshwater fish don't just politely swim around the newcomer. The entire chemistry of the water alters. The native fish stop eating, they hide in the corners, their stress hormones spike. The rejection is systemic.
Right.
To understand why Tom made this error, we have to look at the psychology of the person doing the hiring. According to Goodner, the root cause here isn't a lack of candidate skill or even like candidate deception. The single largest predictor of a bad hire is owner desperation.
Wait, desperation? So they aren't actually looking for a perfect ecosystem fit. They are just looking for a life raft.
Exactly. And a life raft doesn't need to be a cultural match. It just needs to float.
Right.
Business owners usually hire when they're absolutely exhausted. They hire when revenue is running too hot and they physically cannot keep up, or when a role has been vacant for so long that the remaining team is starting to burn out.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Any warm body brings a profound, immediate sense of relief to an exhausted manager. And because their brains are tired, they screen for the absolute easiest, lowest cognitive load thing to measure, which is credentials.
Oh, because it's objective.
Right. It takes 2 seconds to verify an MBA. It is incredibly easy to count 12 years of regional experience. But because they stop asking the deeper, more complex questions a calm owner would ask, they invite disaster.
Wait, so desperation is basically acting like a blindfold. It's like going grocery shopping when you're starving. You just grab the first shiny, calorie-dense thing you see on the shelf without reading the nutritional label, and you end up incredibly sick later.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the financial reality of that sickness is severe.
Yeah.
The Society for Human Resource Management, or SHRM, they estimate that the cost of a bad professional hire is about 30% of their first year salary.
That's a lot.
It is. But to use your metaphor, that 30% metric is just the grocery bill at the register. You don't feel the real cost until the nutritional deficit of that bad hire gives your entire department a heart attack 6 months later. Goodner argues that the true cost is actually 5 to 10 times worse than it feels in the moment.
Because SHRM is only counting the visible line items, right? Like, they are looking at recruiting fees, severance packages, maybe basic onboarding costs.
Exactly. They are completely missing the cascading psychological effects on the rest of the team. That 30% metric completely misses the fact that Tom's tenured 14-year foreman is now taking calls from rival recruiters because his daily friction has skyrocketed.
Wow.
Yeah, it misses the long-term clients who quietly walk away, not because they complain, but simply because the new hire's abrasive communication style made them feel unvalued. And it misses the 18 agonizing months you will spend trying to rebuild the shattered trust of your team after the bad hire finally leaves. I mean, the Harvard Business Review notes that 80% of employee turnover traces back to bad hiring decisions. People don't flee bad companies. They flee toxic ecosystems created by bad hires.
Okay, so if desperation blinds us to what actually matters, what are the actual nutritional facts we are failing to look at? Like, what are the specific invisible traits that Goodner says we need to be measuring if we want to protect the tank?
Goodner identifies 3 hidden variables that every hire carries into a room. And these are variables that are virtually impossible to spot on a standard resume. The first is fit. And we need to be very clear about the mechanism of fit. Fit does not mean chemistry.
Okay, distinguish those for me.
It doesn't mean you share the same hobbies or want to grab a beer with them on a Friday. Fit is the structural alignment between a candidate's natural operating style and the actual climate of your company.
Okay, I see the logic, but isn't that incredibly subjective? Like, how do you measure fit without just hiring clones of yourself and creating this massive echo chamber?
You measure it by looking at operational friction.
Operational friction.
Right. If you have a careful, highly relational, slow and steady culture, and you drop a high pressure, direct communicating closer into that mix, they aren't just going to struggle to close deals. They are going to fundamentally reorganize the temperature of every room they walk into.
Right.
The native team members will feel attacked by the directness, and the new hire will feel bogged down by the consensus building. Conversely, if you drop a quiet, methodical specialist into a fast-paced, improvisational startup team, they will drown because their required speed violates their need for precision.
Wow.
Neither person is wrong. The environmental fit is just incompatible.
That distinction between chemistry and operational friction is crucial. And the second hidden variable Goodner points out is growth potential, which is basically the difference between hiring for this quarter versus hiring for the next 5 years. He argues that most owners overpay for ready-made candidates, you know, people who have executed the exact job title before, and they completely underpay for grow-into-ACBOL candidates.
And the mechanism behind this oversight is what quietly stunts a company's scaling ability. If someone is only capable of executing the exact job description placed in front of them today, they become an immediate bottleneck the moment the company tries to evolve.
Right.
Growth potential is driven by capacity, humility, and curiosity. A candidate who asks deep questions about why a process exists has infinitely more growth potential than a candidate who arrogantly assumes they already know how to fix it based on their last job.
Here's where it gets really interesting, which brings us to the third and perhaps most impactful variable, the inner operating system. And this ties directly back to the EQS framework Goodner uses, which centers on emotional intelligence.
Exactly. The framework looks at five dimensions of EQ: self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills.
Mm.
If we want to understand how these interact with the team's ecosystem, let's look at self-regulation.
Okay, give me an example.
What does poor self-regulation actually look like in a Tuesday afternoon status meeting?
Right.
It looks like an amygdala hijack. When a project goes sideways, a candidate with low self-regulation doesn't just panic internally. Their visible panic forces everyone else in the room into a defensive posture. The entire team is forced to shift their cognitive energy from problem-solving to threat mitigation just to manage the new hire's emotional state.
That is exhausting. And think about how profoundly these three variables impact the long-term climate from the perspective of the employees who are already there.
Yeah.
As an employee, you really don't care if the new manager has an MBA from a prestigious school. You care if their lack of self-awareness means they throw you under the bus when a project fails. You care if their lack of empathy means they refuse to listen when you explain the historical context of a client account. But here is the massive challenge. If fit, growth potential, and EQ are entirely absent from a resume, how do you actually test for them before making a job offer?
Well, this is where Goodner transitions from theory into a highly actionable toolkit. The first tool he recommends is what he calls the real job description. He insists that business owners need to write a second, completely unposted job description that focuses entirely on climate, not technical skills. It documents the hallway culture, not the wall culture.
I have to push back on this a little bit because writing a climate description sounds incredibly difficult in practice. Culture is almost invisible when you are the one inside it. It's like asking a fish to describe water. How do you actually document something as nebulous as your hallway culture?
It's hard, but it requires an honest audit of your friction points. Your wall culture is the aspirational list of core values you printed on a poster in the break room.
Right, the stuff everyone ignores.
Yeah, exactly. Your hallway culture is how conflict is actually resolved when a deadline is missed. To write the real job description, you have to ask uncomfortable questions. Is our conversational style actually blunt and argumentative, or is it polite and consensus-driven?
Uh-huh.
What is the actual day-to-day pace? What level of independence is truly required to survive here? Documenting those answers protects your ecosystem because it forces you to acknowledge the reality of your environment rather than the fantasy.
Okay, so once you map out that reality, what are the tactical ways Goodner recommends pulling the truth out of a candidate during an interview?
Tool number two is called the three questions behind the resume. These are specific interview questions engineered to bypass rehearsed PR-friendly answers and surface that inner operating system.
Let's hear them.
So for self-awareness, he suggests asking, tell me about a time you got real feedback that fundamentally changed how you worked.
Oh, that is a phenomenal filter, because if they can't think of a time, or if they like subtly blame the person giving the feedback for being unreasonable, you instantly know their self-awareness is severely lacking. They don't possess the feedback loop necessary for adaptation.
Exactly. Now, to test self-regulation, you ask, walk me through the last time a project blew up around you. What did the first 10 minutes look like for you? Notice the phrasing.
Yeah.
You aren't asking how they eventually solved it. You are asking how their nervous system reacted when the pressure spiked. Did they immediately start pointing fingers? Or did they pause, breathe, and assess the damage?
Yeah.
And for empathy, the question is, tell me about a teammate who frustrated you. What do you think they would say about working with you?
Man, that requires them to step entirely outside their own ego and accurately inhabit the perspective of someone they didn't even like. If they can articulate their own flaws from a rival's point of view, their EQ is off the charts.
It really is.
Now, the energy questions are great, but candidates still fake their way through interviews. This brings us to tool number three, which is such a clever hack. Goodner calls it the two reference test. We all know the references a candidate provides are going to glow. They are carefully curated.
Right.
But Goodner says when you call that handpicked reference, ask them for the name of one other person who worked closely with the candidate.
Yes. It bypasses the curation. You aren't digging for dirt. You are looking for the candidate's shape from a secondary angle.
Mm.
That second reference, the one the candidate didn't prep beforehand, almost always reveals the nuanced truth that the first reference was politely omitting.
So smart. But let's say someone slips through the cracks anyway. They fake the EQ questions, the references pan out, and you hire them. How do you catch the mistake before the ecosystem completely dies?
This raises an important question, and it brings us to tool number four, the 90-day trust audit. Goodner admits this is the most uncomfortable measurement a leader can take, but it is the most vital. 90 days after a new hire starts, you sit down alone, take out a piece of paper, and ask yourself one binary question. Is the trust account in my company larger or smaller today than it was before this person started?
Okay, I have to stop you there. A 90-day trust audit sounds great on a leadership blog, but in the real world. For a small business owner like Tom, firing an executive after 3 months is legally and financially terrifying. You've already paid the recruiter, you spent weeks onboarding them, and letting them go feels like admitting a massive, highly public failure.
It is terrifying, and you are highlighting exactly why owners hesitate and end up keeping toxic hires for 2 years instead of 3 months.
Right.
But consider the alternative. Letting them go is a massive short-term disruption. But keeping a hire who is draining the trust account is a terminal illness for the company. If the trust is smaller at 90 days, it means they are actively draining the ecosystem. If you catch it early and act, you suffer a localized wound. If you wait, you lose your 14-year foreman.
Which brings us perfectly back around to Tom's story. Let's look at how he actually applied this toolkit to pull his company out of a nosedive. Because he didn't just give up after the disastrous hire. He went back to the drawing board and finally ran the real job description for his sales operations role.
He did. And the contrast was immediate. On paper, that first hire was exactly what he needed. But when Tom actually documented his climate, he realized his hallway culture demanded highly relational selling.
Yep.
He needed someone with the patience to work alongside a veteran foreman without rolling their eyes at manual processes.
Mm-hmm.
He needed someone with the humility to spend a month learning how a small Georgia flooring company actually runs before trying to rewrite the entire corporate playbook in week three.
Right. He had completely ignored the friction points the first time around. So Tom replaces the initial disaster. But this time he hires someone who only has about 2/3 of the shiny resume, but she has 3 times the fit. She has the EQ. She has the growth potential to learn the industry, even if she didn't have 12 years of named accounts.
And the ecosystem's response to that alignment is just the most revealing part of Goodner's case study. The restoration of cultural fit transformed the workplace back to health almost immediately.
Wow.
The 14-year foreman decided to stay. The estimator's friendly, collaborative tone naturally returned to his communications because his nervous system was no longer detecting a daily threat.
So what does this all mean? Well, I think the most poetic part of this whole turnaround is the symmetry at the end. Remember that ominous sticky note the office manager left on Tom's monitor when the entire company was falling apart?
Oh, yeah.
Well, at the end of the new hire's first quarter, that same office manager leaves a new sticky note on Tom's monitor. And this one just says, "She gets it. Glad you found her."
That sticky note is the ultimate metric of a successful hire. It proves Goodner's central thesis. Hiring really is one of the highest leverage acts of stewardship a leader possesses. It isn't just filling a vacant seat, it is actively protecting the soil. Implementing a rigorous assessment approach based on EQFIT principles doesn't just improve your quarterly metrics. It protects the fragile ecosystem you have spent years building, and it saves everyone involved from agonizing, entirely preventable pain.
And for you listening, the core takeaway is about timing. You have to implement these tools before you find yourself in a season of bleeding. Write that real job description today, even if you don't plan on hiring for another 6 months. Map out your hallway culture before exhaustion and desperation blind you to it.
Absolutely. And to close our deep dive today, I want to pivot this entire concept and point the lens inward. We have spent this entire time exploring how you assess the ecosystem fit of others. But consider your own career for a moment. When you walk into a new room or take on a new leadership role, what does your inner operating system do to the temperature of that ecosystem? Are you the saltwater fish thrashing around, demanding the tank magically change its chemistry just for you? Look closely at your own wake. Are you quietly draining the trust account of the people around you, or are you multiplying it?
That is a phenomenal question to leave on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this episode. If you have any questions about this week's episode, or maybe a suggestion for future episodes you'd like us to explore, please contact us through our website at eqfit.org. For more information and inspiration, connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube at eqfit.